Welcome to the Shelf Shedding Movie Show. I'm your host, Jason Dubray. In this episode, I'm going to go back to the month of February of 2024 with a review of my February Vinegar Syndrome delivery. Again, each month, I'm not completely sure what's going to be coming in the package. And these are typically movies that I have not seen before. They are deep dives, cult cinema, often international films as well. I did have some fun with the January films that were sent to me. Some of them were better than others. I do have to say the February lot was a harder sell for me. A few of the movies I'm going to be somewhat kind to, but ultimately in the end, I'm going to be quite direct about which ones I think are the best, but not from a particularly, in my opinion, great set of films here. And some of them I am, and probably maybe even more of them I'm going to shed from my collection at the end of this episode. So we're going to start off with the provocative title of The Playgirls and the Vampire. Directed by Piero Regnola. It's a 1960 Italian horror movie. It's the story of a group of showgirls who seek refuge in a remote castle after their car breaks down, only to discover that the castle is inhabited by a vampire and his undead minions. So essentially, it's an Italian horror version of Bram Stoker's Dracula, not referring to Dracula in this case. In this case, we've got this guy who lives in this castle, and he has kind of, as you would see in these films, some of the help who is a little bit suspicious of outsiders. And then we have this van full of these performers, I guess, as they are calling the playgirls, or more showgirls, or performers to go from town to town, as well as their manager and the driver of the van stop for refuge at this place. Of course, this is a scene where they're warned to turn around and go somewhere else, but they choose, of course, not to do that. I think this one is actually, you know, it's not amazing, and I kind of predicted a lot of what would happen, maybe not necessarily everything, but you know, it's a decent enough story. There is another title called The Vampire's Last Prey, which I think is a little bit more accurate a title for this film. It has a big music score. Again, every warning you could possibly think of as to why they shouldn't. There's one of the performers named Vera, who seems very drawn to the castle and feels like she may have some sort of a history with this. Again, if you know Bram Stoker's Dracula, this character will make sense. There's, you know, a version of this character in all of these retellings. And then we have characters who are supposed to, of course, stay in their rooms and not leave their rooms under any circumstances. And then, you know, one by one, they start doing that, and some of them end up dying as a result. There's things that don't completely make sense. One of the showgirls is killed, and the very next day they're having a very excitable rehearsal of their performance. There doesn't seem to be a lot of time to kind of recognize that, you know, somebody has died. There's a scene in here that's probably where that playgirl's notion comes from, where there's this kind of quasi, not full on, but striptease to a blues song that happens. It comes out of nowhere, stops the movie completely dead, doesn't move the plot forward in any way, but it's just one of those curious scenes that you would get in this type of a film. Count Gabar is again the lonely, seemingly kind man who has let these people in, even though they're breaking the rules left, right, center, and develops a romance with this Vera, who feels like she knows this castle. But then there's a little bit of an extra quasi Jekyll and Hyde thing that goes on. There's lots of scenes where a lot of exposition is given as opposed to characters talking to each other. Yeah, and I don't know. It's fine for what it is. There's, you know, for the budget they have, they do the best that they can. Spoilers, when one of our villains dies kind of towards the end, there's a little bit of a silly animation, which is probably the best special effect that they could come up with at the time. But it feels very different than the rest of the visual sense of the film. There are characters who completely disappear for big chunks of time, kind of especially during the climax of the film, and then they kind of show up in a weird way towards the end. So if you're kind of hearing them conflicted, I mean, I'm not going to be recommending The Playgirls and The Vampire to a large group of people, but if you like Italian horror and you want to see kind of a different version of the Dracula story, it is passable. The question then kind of becomes whether I'm deciding to shelve and keep this movie or shed it. And I'll give that my decision on that at the end of the episode. The next is another one of these collections, a very nice giallo collection from the January release. This is a collection called Spanish Bloodbath.
Siempre noté algo raro en ese.
Yo soy hija de uno de los asesinos de tu padre.
Veas, como el asesino. Ven conmigo ahora, los peces tienen hambre.
¿Quién es?
¿Pero qué hace?
¿Qué tipo de persona puede ser tan salvaje?
Ese pez.
Vamos a estar siempre perseguidos por la sangre.
Estamos aquí en silencio porque ha muerto asesinada Lady Cecilia Mario.
Obsesionado por los peces.
Which has three features. And the first one I watched was a movie called Night of the Skull. It also has another title called Night of the Killers. This was a weird one, and I think I just never quite worked for me. The opening sequence is this weird montage of murders that happen throughout the movie that we would then be seeing as the movie happens. I would much rather we just started in telling the story of this film instead of having this strange title sequence where a lot of the murders are kind of almost being ruined for us as an audience. This is one just dark and stormy night, and there's a creepy house, and there's a millionaire who lives there, and then ends up getting killed. And then we have this rather colorful inspector who's trying to solve this in kind of it's called a quasi Agatha Christie Knives Out type of a manner. Different things bothered me. I mean, they had some really bad sound design for this movie. It became this thunder and rain that would kind of come and go, and you would kind of almost hear that how it was a canned sound effect. The killer has this skull mask. It's a bit of a Grim Reaper look. I think that's it's kind of effective in a way, but a little bit cheesy in places too. This movie made ample use of that forced perspective shots that you would see in a giallo. Seems to kind of lack some of the exploitation. I don't, it's a little bit that that a giallo film would have. One of the things that, like, at one point a character dies. I wasn't aware that he died because I saw his hands kind of moving, and just I think they maybe needed to get a different take with that actor. It was maybe not caught in editing, or it was an unintentional mistake. There's kind of this history of this one character who might be the rich person's daughter, or might not be, and kind of becomes, I guess, one of the character that we're supposed to be cheering for. There's some bad quick editing. The wife is evil. I knew she was evil the first time we saw her in the film, and that didn't, there was nothing that was really surprising about that. There are scenes which are supposed to be at midnight, but it looks totally bright outside. I've seen this sometimes in some black and white films where just whatever the night effect or moonlight effect is not happening as much. You know, I'm not getting this is an older film, so there are some obviously politically incorrect things. It'd be kind of weird if there wasn't. It took me a while to figure out where they were. Was this Britain? Where was it? But apparently they're in Louisiana, as it turns out. There's this strange, again, subplot involving these two characters who have an attraction to each other, but they kind of discover that they're brother and sister. And then we find out that they're not, thank goodness. But, you know, all of their scenes and their connection was kind of off-putting throughout the movie. Very melodramatic close-ups of characters. There's this butler character whose intentions are a little bit all over the place. You could almost predict who was going to be killed next. But in some cases, it was kind of going to be obvious because I saw the characters who were being killed in that montage at the very beginning of the film. The whole surprise, I guess, and plot twist is just too ridiculous. It was kind of, I kind of caught on to it, but it just didn't make a whole lot of sense. And then this ridiculous climactic sequence where the killer takes forever to try to kill our main character, for lack of a better term, our final girl in this film. And it's just to buy time so that this character can be rescued. And then, like, our main police officer, and who's probably gives the best performance in the movie, that actor, just comes completely out of nowhere, just in the nick of time there for this one. So, and the after the climax and the very weird last moment, strange jazz score to it, which seems completely disconnected, but I guess they're in Louisiana, but it really doesn't feel like they're in Louisiana at all, because, I mean, all the characters are obviously Spanish, even though we've got this dubbing. Yeah, this one just wasn't for me at all. It's not one that I think I would ever consider revisiting even, but the movie's called Night of the Skull. The next one was, you know, I would say likely the best of this lot of films. It's called Violent Bloodbath, or the other title is Punishment of Death. And it starts Fernando Rey, very well-known character actor, most famously as the villain character in The French Connection. He's Oscar Bataille, who is a French prosecutor who has had this history of, you know, pushing for people to get the death sentence. And we see this kind of in flashbacks. And he's on this vacation, essentially, with his very young wife. And he thinks that he spots somebody that he had, sentenced to death some years ago. And there's a bit of a murder mystery happening that he is helping out the police with. There's this writer who is trying to cover his story and his history as a prosecutor, but is a little bit, has different political values, I guess. And then some jealousy develops because this, the young wife named Patricia knows the younger, handsome writer, And you know, there's some feeling that there's an attraction there as well, which Fernando Rey is then kind of suspicious of. There's this other woman named Laura who's connected to this, you know, initially this house where this Jacques Morel, the serial killer, killed his victims, and we seem to be seeing the same patterns happening again. This character Oscar that Fernando Rey plays is very interesting because he has a lot of OCD tendencies, and that kind of worked well for him as a prosecutor, but doesn't work necessarily as that well for him in his marriage. There's a bit of a weird exploitation-ish type of scene where there's a spider crab eating contest with a bunch of women in bikinis. Don't think it has a whole lot of anything to do with the movie, kind of like that striptease scene in the Playgirls and the Vampire. It's just, I guess, with this B cinema, it's something that you kind of have to put up with. Another movie, again, that uses that forced perspective shot or the POV shot of the killer's point of view. I think the biggest knock on this film, as entertaining as it is I ended up being ahead of it. But I enjoyed the journey enough. This has a good music score that was effective in building suspense throughout. There's some quibbles here and there about things, about when a character is needing rescued from the killer, then this one character takes the worst and weirdest way to try to break into a house to try to help the other character. And I kind of knew a lot of things that were going to happen in the climax, as I said. And the movie does actually has a good ending, and it sort of does in some ways avoid some cliches that a lesser movie would make there. So one of the things I kind of said with these collections, the Spanish Bloodbath collection, is determining, you know, as far as breaking up the collection, would I would just keep one disc or a couple discs from it or not? Or would I just keep the whole collection together and evaluate the collection and determine whether I shed it from my collection or not? But I would certainly say Violent Bloodbath, not the best title in the world, for sure. Punishment of Death, probably the alternate title is a better one, once again. Is one that makes it a little bit hard for me with this collection, because it is one that is an enjoyable film, and I think I can recommend it. The next one is called The Fish with the Eyes of Gold, or The Fish with the Gold Eyes. Just a bit of semantics there, depending on what you're looking at. Starts off with this scene where a scuba diver kills this girl who's swimming on the beach, and then there's this other guy in a boat who witnesses this. It has a very giallo type of point of view shot, just like a lot of these. And then we watch this other gentleman who very, very kind of bleach blonde hair. I think probably a good looking guy for the era that this film came out in. He meets this woman who's had a fight with her boyfriend, and he catches a ride with her because he's kind of hitchhiking through this town. And then he goes, has sex, and wakes up, and the woman he's with is dead. And then looks like, surprise, surprise, he's the one who's going to be blamed for this. It felt very Brian De Palma in some ways, some of these situations and kind of the look of the film. And of course, De Palma and giallo cinema, even though this is a Spanish horror movie, you know, they're very much connected. And De Palma was very much inspired by this type of cinema. Of course, our main character does everything you could possibly think of that would be the wrong decision caught in this scenario. We have some kind of weird ways that there's like backstories to some of the characters. The one character, same one who was in the boat, who's named Zachary and turns out to be friends with this Derek. He has flashbacks after like witnessing this murder to this time when his own murder got his own mother got murdered, and there was a fish tank that got smashed, and he saw this goldfish that was flopping on the ground. I think it's the idea of the fish in the title comes from this idea. We have another character who's this student who also is staying scene with Zachary and Zachary's wife there with Derek. And then the second that they see each other, you know, okay, there's going to be a romance that develops there. And then she's connected to, she has this weird boss kind of in this aquarium. Her boss's name is Pedro. This guy, like, it screams early on, okay, Pedro must be the killer, must be the killer. So you can guarantee that, you know, this character is not likely to be the killer because this happens within the first 20 to 30 minutes of the film. Feels very over the top, a Spanish soap opera type of acting style. Sometimes in editing, they would extend shots longer than they had to be, where, you know, there was no reason to, no purpose. They just need to cut to the next scene. There's a really bad fight scene at one point. Some really strange music choices during a scene where these brakes have been tampered with that leads to this car accident. The acting isn't great. The pacing isn't great. But there's something to this murder mystery in the story itself is kind of interesting, and the things that kind of remind me of De Palma or the best of a giallo film make it more watchable than a couple of the other movies from this month's stack of films. You know, as we go along, we start to find the soap, it feeds into the soap opera nature of it, that everybody seems to be sleeping with everybody in this movie. And, you know, I guess towards the end here, we also, you know, when we kind of find out who has done this, you could probably pick out a little bit of who the killer might be. But, you know, there are a few things in here that make it, you know, some parts of it less obvious, but I'm not sure everybody's motivation is completely fleshed out in this one. And then, you know, right, again, we, this romance, you kind of know the direction it's going, but this other character is just so, well, there's a lot of things that are just really over the top. When it comes to when we find out about Marina's relationship to her boss, Pedro, and how Pedro acts, it just feels like it's from a different movie, and it's such a cartoonish type of thing. I guess maybe if I was to revisit this movie, I'm not sure I'm excited to revisit it. If I just focus on it just as a Spanish soap opera and nothing else, which has a little bit of a half-interesting murder mystery, then maybe I would be judging it a little bit less harshly as I am. But I'm not sure, again, that I can recommend The Fish with the Eyes of Gold to that many people unless they're kind of fascinated by this kind of cinema and this specific collection of the last three movies that I've reviewed, separate from The Playgirls and the Vampire, which is its own disc there. So the last three movies there, Night of the Skull, Violent Bloodbath, and The Fish with the Eyes of Gold are all from this Spanish Bloodbath collection, which isn't as good as the collection, the kind of that giallo one from last January. But again, to me, the find in there is Violent Bloodbath. And mostly because it has solid acting. And Fernando Rey is a terrific actor and is able to sell that movie. But the other people around Fernando Rey are solid as well. I'm not, you know, most of the movies I'm talking about do not have great acting. And then I think this was kind of the big find of this month's collection was a movie called Phase Four.
In the next few moments, we will try to give you an impression of a new kind of film experience. If your curiosity is aroused, you are ready for Phase Four.
Sending back my message.
What does it mean?
This is no message.
If there's an intelligence there, I want it to know there's an intelligence here.
I believe that they'll move rather quickly into desert areas, taking over the countryside first, then laying siege to towns and cities. We have only one chance.
Fight a force that knows what your next move will be before you think of it.
By Saul Bass. I guess it's a bit of an quasi-environmental horror movie. We have a very, very long opening sequence where we're taking a look at, it's narrated, and these animated ants that don't look that great. And the ants end up going to war. And then these human characters turn up and get some mediocre acting, and the ants drove away an entire community in Arizona, except for this one older couple and this pretty girl and a horse who becomes kind of a third character. And this is in the first phase of the film and is broken into four phases, hence phase four. And then we have this other guy on a farm whose horse gets killed by these killer ants, and then leads to this car crash, and then we end up having, again, this young girl with these two scientists who are kind of trying to find a way to study these ants, but also kind of battle them and prevent them from taking over the world. There's a little bit of some gruesome moments, some ants coming out of a corpse. The girl Kendra is decent enough, but this is supposed to be in Arizona. For some reason, she has a British accent. Which kind of, again, seems to be a thing I am struggling with some of these movies, is they're set in the United States, but they don't feel like they necessarily are. I do appreciate that the effects are practical. There's no computer effects because of this movie being a phase four, being a 70s film. But it drags. It's got a really, really slow pace. And I don't always mind that in sci-fi films, particularly 70s sci-fi movies, but this one really, really was kind of tough to sit through. Not a fun experience. And we just kind of watched these characters kind of struggle. The two leads of these scientists are Nigel Davenport, who I wasn't really much for. I think it was, kind of giving the more colorful role. But Michael Murphy is a very well-known character actor. This is, I think, still when he was hungry, a hungry young actor, I guess. And this was probably a pretty good role for him. But if you are not quite sure who he is, he'd acted in movies like Batman Returns, White House Down, Robert Altman's MASH, and he worked with Altman on quite a few projects. Cabin, Mrs. Miller, Kansas City, Nashville. He was in that as well. He was in Woody Allen's movie Manhattan. He's one of the, those guy actors that you would have seen in several films. And so he's kind of the saving grace, but it is a strange film about killer ants and not much else. And I think the science in it is accurate enough, but in some, imagine what would happen if, these ants started to have the power to be able to, because there's a lot more of them than there are of us, to kind of take over the world. And yeah, but it's, I don't know, it was a tough drag trying to get through this one. And this was kind of the highlight movie of the month. It wasn't the highlight movie of the month, obviously, for me, of the movies that we're talking about here. So going through, just to wrap up on this, you know, relatively short episode, I would say that my least favorite of these films was Night of the Skull, just because it was kind of bad and the production levels were low. And I mean, I don't mind a micro-budget horror film, but I just didn't understand the point in having all of the murders shown to us during the title sequence so we would know they were going to happen, and have this really kind of lame, badly acted murder mystery story that just kind of doesn't lead anywhere interesting. So yeah, so that one I would give 1 point to. 2 points to Phase 4. Just because it was disappointing. I feel like this is the one that had a budget, a little bit more of a budget and, you know, some ambition to it and the potential to be quite a good film. But it really, directed by Sal Bass, who's a good director, and it just lacked energy. It was just not, early on I wanted it to end when I was kind of at the tail end of Phase 1 into Phase 2, but I had a few more phases that I had to sit through before I could get to the end of it. Hating to be negative in this way, but that's just the reality of things. Then, I guess, I would give 2 points to Phase 4, 3 points to The Fish with the Eyes of Gold. The acting's not great, the pacing's not amazing, but it is an interesting enough murder mystery story. And again, maybe if I just stand back and appreciate the, you know, the art of the Spanish melodrama, and that's probably the background a lot of these actors are coming from, then it's maybe a little bit more watchable than some of the other films. It certainly has quite a bit more energy than Phase 4, and it has a similar type of budget to Night of the Skull, but a much more interesting mystery and story to tell. Then I would give 4 points to my second favorite of the films from this month's collection, The Playgirls and the Vampire. Again, I really don't like that title that much, but I do like the Dracula story. That seems to work in all of its different versions that I've watched. So it's not too bad a film. If you like that, there are a few creaky edges here and there, and there's some scenes that just completely don't make sense and stop the movie dead and just kind of eat away at the time so that they have a feature length film, I suppose. But, you know, some of the performances are good, some are not so good, but it's an easier pill to swallow than the other films. The only one I would the only one that gets a thumbs up really that I would recommend is Violent Bloodbath. Again, this idea of how you live at the end of your career when you have pushed for the death penalty for so many people as a prosecutor, and then how those things start to psychologically haunt you and you as you review your career towards the end and going on this vacation and this kind of interesting marriage dynamic where, you know, this younger woman really does love this man, but he has a lot of problems. And then we kind of see as things unravel how much his wife does love him, even though we're led to believe that she might not, you know, be using them for some other things. And there's an interesting dynamic there, a good murder mystery. It's got a couple of, you know, B cinema flaws here and there, but overall it's quite a good movie and a really cool setting for the film that makes a big difference. So that's one that I would give a thumbs up to. But the question is, what do I do? Because we have a single disc of The Playgirls and the Vampire. We have a single disc of Phase 4, which I quite clearly did not enjoy. And then the Spanish Bloodbath collection with 3 discs, Night of the Skull, Violent Bloodbath, and The Fish with the Eyes of Gold. I am actually going to be shedding all of it. So obviously there's a spectrum of films that I like to really, really did not like in this collection. But I don't see myself really revisiting any of these films again. So I think I'm going to remove them all from my movie collection. But as always, it's very rare that I regret my time with a movie. I'm glad, like, Phase 4 was one that looked like it should be a Jason Dubrain movie. I've seen it now. I now know what it's about. I think it was a very hard to find movie up until this point where Vinegar Syndrome has released it, which I'm happy that they did. And I'm sure this movie has its fans, and certainly, you know, Michael Murphy gives a good performance in it, if nothing else, but that's almost nothing. The only thing that I can kind of cling on to that too with that one. So I am going to be shedding all of them, but once again, the highlight for me was Violent Bloodbath. And that's the one that I'll remember from this February delivery from Vinegar Syndrome. I apologize as far as kind of the negativity and the nitpicking maybe with some of these films. And I would encourage people to form their own opinions and check these out and let me know if you feel that I've been too hard on this collection of films. And I'm happy to engage in any movie discussion with listeners about this. But that is my solo show on my February Vinegar Syndrome collection. I will very soon be unwrapping and taking a look at my March, and also I have my April one. I might decide to combine those two into one episode since I have them both sitting here and ready to go. And so there'll be more with this series to come, as well as our regular episodes. Just to wrap up here, please be kind to one another. And as always, you know, keep supporting the movies and support independent movie podcasts and friends of the show, like Larry with Rank and Review, Matt with Film Feast, Lindsay with Schlock and Awe, and Kurt with A Lifetime of Hallmark. And until next time, keep supporting the movies, and thank you for listening. Goodbye.